Welcome to the DataScience.LA podcast. Tal Galili is in many ways a central spoke of the R community. Both gregarious and thoughtful, he has grown his website, R Bloggers, into the definitive aggregation of the R community's voice through its genuine, passion-driven intensity. Tal had a simple desire as a young programmer, to learn more about his chosen tools and looked to the internet to find other voices like his. When Googling for R blogs, Tal found numerous blogs about pirates, but only a handful about R. This interview details how Tal started R Bloggers and decided to challenge the status quo, as well as his new projects. Enjoy.
Talking about the maker movement.
Yes.
You know, I think it's a fantastic movement. I think it's going to empower a great many people to do things that previously were unheard of. You know, there's been so many times where if a piece of equipment breaks in a remote neighbor, in a remote city, in a remote place, they don't have the ability to get the part.
Yeah.
And with the spread of 3D manufacturing and 3D printing, that's going to be a thing of the past.
Yeah.
You were saying that there is a there's a conference going on right now in Israel.
Yes, that's true. So I need to repeat it?
Yeah.
Okay. What I was saying is that there is now a conference called TOM, which is Tikkun Olam Makers, which means fixing the world by making it. And it's a conference that is held in Israel, I can't remember exactly where, which is hosting together many makers from Israel who is doing a hackathon on trying to find new ways of doing manufacturing that would benefit people with handicapped and have accessories printed to them and stuff like that.
That's fantastic. Anytime you can talk about moving the power to change the world from the hands of the few into mm-hmm. the hands of the many,
yeah.
that's one of the things that really drives social change.
Yes.
To a degree, that's one of the things that attracted me to R and data science.
Yes.
You know, as a tie into that, you know, this distributed maker movement, they're going to be generating lots of data, and they themselves are going to be doing analysis.
Yes.
One of the things that you're famous for is R bloggers.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about how that came up?
How R bloggers came up. So I think R bloggers is a hobby that kind of went out of control. It started out by me being introduced to the R world and not knowing much and wanting to find out new ways of how to use R and what can be done with it. And I naturally tried to look for bloggers who write about R. And starting to do that, I mean, the first step I took was to go to Google and type R and blog, and I discovered that there are many people who write about pirates and not that many who write about R.
Yeah.
So I started out picking them one by one and trying to follow them on my own. And after a while, I realized that it's maybe not the way to go. That maybe what I should do is change my perspective and instead of looking for bloggers, in some way incentivize them to find me.
Okay.
And what I did was start this aggregating website, and I explained to bloggers, give me permission to republish your content. And by doing that, you would have one central hub where I would find users who would consume your content and would get aware and would be aware of what you have to offer. And in return, I would know that you exist and I would find interesting things to read. And at the beginning, I had people like David Smith, who was the main blogger at the time. He's still a main blogger, I think, also today. Lovely person. And at the time, he was very kind to give him permission to use his blog. And I also had one R tip a day, which I can't remember the blogger's name, but he was also one of the first bloggers who came up, and he didn't write one R tip a day at the time, but he did write several very nice posts that I found useful, and he also gave me permission, and so on. I picked them one by one, and I came to the R conference at the time. I think, I can't remember if it was 2010, and I gave a talk about R bloggers, and I tried to tell people, you know, you should really blog, and you should really come over and start sharing your content in a way that everyone would have it very easily accessible, and not just keep it at forums. And I remember going to people one by one and telling to them, what are you doing? And they were telling me, and I said, wow, that's fascinating. Where can I read about it? Can you start a blog? And by starting a blog, can you join R bloggers? And I even have Marcus, I can't remember his family name, who does a Google Viz package.
Oh, cool.
And I remember having this conversation where he told me, oh, I'm not going to blog. And we had this long conversation. At the end of it, he emailed me and he said, you really convinced me to start blogging. And he thanked me, I think, a year later in the conference or 2 years later. So I started this out just in that concept of saying, I want people to share their information. And if to say something else about why that motivates me, I think one of the biggest things that people think about when they're thinking about collaborative projects. They think, well, we should have this huge website that hubs everyone together and everyone should contribute, you know, like a wiki or something like that. And what I came to realize is that people are very, very selfish, self-motivated people, mm-hmm. and very self-centered. And I'm saying this not in a negative way, just as a matter of fact, we're self-centered. And blogging, I think, is an incredible platform for people to be able to keep control over their content, over their comments, over what they think, over who can view what, and edit stuff. And by having your own blog, it's a wonderful way for people to redistribute their content in a way that they're the center of attention. Whereas in Wikipedia, the content is the center of sure. attention, but you're not that important. Sure. And we want to feel important. We want to feel that we get full credit for what we do. So I think blogging is wonderful, but the problem with that is that you can't find anyone.
Sure.
And also one very often very common theme that I would hear from people is they would say, well, but I don't have much to blog about. I mean, I do something which is interesting maybe once a year that is worth publishing, so it's not worth starting a blog for. But this is where I came to them and I said, well, you don't need to work hard. All you need to do is you have the blog and update it once a year. And if I have 100 bloggers, I would have 100 articles a year. Yeah. That's awesome. So that didn't work so well because I now have over 550 bloggers.
Oh, wow.
Who write, some of them write more than once a year. So we get many, many articles and it's actually flooding a bit. But it turned out that there are many, many people who are convinced that they have something to share with the world and they're doing an incredible job at it.
That's awesome.
It is.
So you have a really privileged view then into the art community as a whole.
I try to remain. I mean, it's very tempting to. I don't know how to say that in English. It's very tempting to be cocky about stuff like that. But I feel like that's a very, very wrong view about it. I feel like it's very difficult to really understand what people are doing. It's very difficult to really understand something so complex as a community of people sure. who are contributing. I barely can say I understand anything. What I do is I am joyful at looking at what people are doing and how they're sharing information. And I can also say in a similar fashion that for me, one of the motivations for dealing with online collaboration in general, which I started doing before I knew R. Mm-hmm. I was more active at the WordPress open source sure. community before I got involved with R, is I think a deep realization that I'm not very smart and that most people are not very smart and most of us alone are not worth much. But by coming together and sharing our understandings and collaborating and helping each other, we can make really wonderful things happen. And the problem is how do you get that wonderful ideal with very selfish people?
Sure.
And blogging is really one of the wonderful solutions for that. I think that because of that, I don't think it's going to die out that fast.
So one of the things that we've been discussing in the Los Angeles R and data science community mm-hmm. is the idea of pairing technological people with editors
mm-hmm.
to help them get over, because you'll meet people that are very technological that when you talk to them they've had bad experiences putting writing out because mm-hmm, all mm-hmm, of their mm-hmm, writing has mm-hmm. been evaluated academically and
yeah.
it's been very strictly judged
yeah.
or they don't have a voice and haven't developed a voice
yes.
yet. In your experience, have you found any ways to help encourage people to write? Is there tools or tricks or methods or processes that you discovered to really to tease a little bit of
yeah.
structure out of these folks?
Well, I think I have several things to say about that. First off, the problem of how to get people to write and to use blogs is not something that is unique to our community. It's something that is shared by many, many communities. And I think the WordPress open source project and movement is an incredible project that deals with that question quite often. And there is so much resources, so many resources for people who are interested in learning how to write, including in WordPress itself. They have a plugin that it comes built in that does not only spell checking but also checks sentence structures and
okay.
stuff like that. You can have a look at. There's so many thesaurus out there online, free. I mean, I think that the only way, for me, I'm not a native English speaker, and I started writing in English, I think, only 5 years ago, maybe okay. something like that. And the only way to do it is just jump in and be forgiven to yourself and know that you'll learn stuff. And also that if it's on your own blog, you can then re-edit your posts and fix the English
That's
after.
True.
I also think, I mean, there are several ways of going about it. One is that you can look at the structure and the way other people are doing it and just get inspiration from that. I think that, for example, many people that come from an academic background are not thinking in a web, you have only 5 seconds to get someone interested sort of way, which I think they should. They should have very compelling, self-explained titles. They should have maybe an abstract which is very tweet-like, short, and explain and to the point, explain what they have to offer in this piece of code. They want to have nice, well-thought-out pictures and graphs and plots in the post to explain and code that helps someone who is not from that background to be able to dive right in and understand what they have to offer. And I think these are general guidelines that I suggest to bloggers and that I see many implement, which is wonderful and lovely. Also, to have people help each other. I mean, if you can have several people work in the same piece, which is very rare, but if you have that, and if you have that privilege of having maybe editors come in and have a look at your article and help you learn how to edit it to be better, that's great. And WordPress these days has the capacity, just like Wikipedia, to have track changes.
Yeah.
So you could have them write a post, and then you can have the editor change it, and then they could look at track changes.
So you've mentioned WordPress a number of times. I love WordPress. I happen to think it's a fantastic platform. Specifically, it democratizes the web page.
Yes.
You no longer have to be a computer programmer.
That's true.
To be able to put information on the web.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I love so much about a lot of the movement in R, particularly with Knitter, and particularly with things like Shiny, is that there's this great undercurrent in technology of democratizing all of these things which have previously been in the space of just a single class of person.
That's true.
In your experience, I'm actually going to ask a slightly nerdy question about WordPress. Have you done anything to integrate WordPress and R?
So when I gave the R bloggers talk, I gave it twice in R conferences. I feel there's not too much point in giving a talk about it anymore because I feel like people are aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I said that one of the big things that I see as what is next was online interactive graphics. I've said it a long time ago, which I don't take credit for thinking about it. I was saying it as something that I see other people are talking about. And also asking how to integrate that in the workflow of creating content and publishing online. I think that, well, in terms of interactive graphics, there is today so much incredible work being done with getting nice APIs that take R commands, turning them into JavaScript or publishing them in some other fashion or technology and having embedded iframes. I mean, today you have Plotly, you have iCharts, you have Google Wiz, you have, what else do you have? Probably a few others that I'm missing, I'm sorry. But you have really incredibly interesting technologies coming forth. I think in that side of interactive graphics, I think that we're still, the jury is really out. I feel like it's now the very interesting point of different technologies competing and communities forming and clustering around different technologies, and I'm really curious to see what people would end up using. Personally, I played more with Google Viz at the time because that was available, but I think any of the other technologies are as good to play with and try and experiment with. Realistically, though, the pipeline of doing that straight from R to WordPress is not as seamless as it should be at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in touch with Yihoy about NeedR and also with the RStudio people, and I think they're just so busy with so many different other things that they haven't gotten around to really getting a good workflow. I've seen several people attempted doing it, and they've done work that has worked for them, but I was not able to reproduce it. So,
which is another thing altogether, the reproducibility.
Yeah, I think ideally what we want to be able to do is to have a NeedR document with R markdown and some nice embedded stuff, and to have some code at the beginning that tells you the API to log into WordPress and do it. And it's all available, and there is all the technology is there. Just someone needs to sit down and do the work. I've not done it because usually for the things I do, I write down the code in WordPress. And get a few plots and just copy-paste them, and it does the job.
Sure.
I'm not even sure that it's that critical to have that workflow, because you want that workflow, for example, when you're doing analysis for a client, you want that workflow to continuously cultivate an end product and to have a back and forth. And with a post, in a sense, you do it after you've done that already.
Sure, that's a good point.
So, in a sense, that workflow is not as crucial. I think it would be crucial if you had a team of people all wanting to communicate to each other in that medium and send it out as a WordPress blog post. But I haven't seen that use case yet. So I think that's the reason why it wasn't solved as of yet.
Okay. Now, your work specifically, I believe, is in biostatistics. Is that correct?
So my first degree was statistics and philosophy. The second degree was biostatistics. And my master's degree was in biostatistics. And now I'm working on my PhD in statistics.
Okay. I was surprised to hear philosophy. What was the emphasis in philosophy?
So actually, there were three tracks inside it. One was cognitive sciences, the second one was Indian philosophy, and the third one was philosophy of science.
Did you do all three, or did you do...
Yeah. There are three consecutive... There were like tiny tastes of each one of them. I felt like I wanted to do statistics and something that I would find less boring, mm-hmm. because I didn't know what statistics was. At hindsight, I would probably do a statistics and computer science, but I know that now. So
what does your current R workflow look like?
So I think it's very similar to many, many people in the community. This community at this point, I have my preferred IDE, which is RStudio. I actually use three IDEs at the same time. Usually I use the R GUI, I use Notepad, and I use RStudio. And the reason for that is... that sometimes I just use R as a calculator for very simple stuff, so I'm not going to fire up RStudio just for that. Yep. So I just turn on the R GUI and use it for that. Then sometimes I play with code and I want to have syntax highlighting, but I don't want to have the overhead of RStudio as much because it sometimes is slower. For example, for very complex computation, sometimes I don't want to have RStudio crash on me in the middle of a very long simulation. So I would pipe it through Notepad, and there is a nice plugin called NPP to R, mm-hmm. which allows you to just write things in Notepad. It has syntax highlighting, and you just mark it and sends it to the R GUI open in the background. But for more well thought out projects where I have a document that I want to create as an output, not a simulation, mm-hmm. I would usually use RStudio with NIDR, either with R Markdown or with LaTeX.
Okay. So you've been programming in R for how long now?
I think 7 years. So I think 7 or 8 years.
If you could go back in time,
yes.
to the, you know, 1 year programmer version of you.
And so 7 years ago or now?
Because
I would have different conversations now with someone who is starting and someone who were starting 7 years ago.
That's a great point. So if you could, let's talk both. So if you can go back 7 years,
yes.
and talk to that 7 years ago person,
yes.
what would be your advice? What would be your conversation?
Wow. Don't invest much in TinR because it's going to go away. That was an idea that didn't survive. What would I say to myself 7 years ago? Difficult to say. So many changes have been done. I would probably say to myself 7 years ago, don't bother, just invest more in the statistics, learn the theory, less the computational side, and deal with it afterwards, after it's all sorted out. And in a sense, it's something to think about also today, because we have so many technologies jumping on us from all directions that, in a way, I think today, if you don't need to study a technology for your own use case and you're not really going to work with it, try to focus on things that are older, that are more mature, that are more theoretically solid, and work with them, because things are so changing that if you don't need to play with it, let it be until it's sold out by people who have to use it. Which I don't know if that means I'm getting old or not, because at the time I was so into cutting edge, and now I feel like I you know, I don't want to get cut. I want to do stuff that works for what I need to do.
Sure.
So that would be at the time. These days I would say to people, start out just with RStudio, because it's just in such an incredible working environment. I would say to them also that if they want to supplement their studies, go with probably C++, because I think that it's a fascinating way of empowering R. What else would I say?
Would you give yourself any advice about, you know, from the community building, blogging, aggregation standpoint?
Yeah, I think that generally I would like to see more people being social in any way they can. I think that, actually, that's a good point to say. Learn to create packages as soon as possible. And I wouldn't say that 7 years ago, because it was such a headache to do. But these days, with the incredible work that's been done by Hadley and Yihoy and JJ and other people in RStudio and other people outside, it's so easy to create your own R package. And I think, you know, the good set of tools a person want to have as they're getting into the R world is, you know the basics of R, feeling comfortable with different packages for their use cases, using something like RStudio, knowing how to use version control in Git, which is incredibly important, and people don't study it at the beginning, but it's very important. Reproducible research and literate programming using NeedR is incredibly valuable and important. And each one of these things that I've said are things that I've not done, and that I've suffered the consequences and have made sure to not repeat the mistake. Sure. Starting from having a researcher come back to me a year or 2 years after I'd done an analysis and ask, oh, change the color. And I would be like, what? I don't know where I did that. I have so many different files. I don't know how I've done it. Or having a change of code and then thinking to myself, why the hell did that now break? And all these things are resolved if you have a good workflow that you can work with in R.
Yeah. So, you talked about version control.
And to also test unit testing.
Really?
Which is, I love unit testing.
Okay.
For package development.
So talk to me a little bit about unit testing for package development. What tools do you use?
So I use test that package.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Hadley's. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I think it's Hadley's. And it's a wonderful thing. You basically write a short piece of test, which is just a function that accepts something running and then checks if it gets the output you intended to have. And you can structure it in a very nice way of, let's call it, categories and sub-tests.
Okay.
And you have them distributed in several files. And every time you make some changes, you run all these files with one command, and it checks it and tells you if anything broke. And if not, then sometimes randomly it would tell you good job. And it's very fun to do. And give you an incredible peace of mind.
Yeah, absolutely. The knowledge that nothing you did changed anything you forgot about.
And then something breaks and you make a test for it. And you know from that point on that it's probably okay.
So we were talking about version control, and it actually started me thinking about the largest sort of community around code is GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
GitHub is something that just in the last couple of years that I've been involved with R, I've seen more and more and more involvement in the R community with GitHub.
Yes.
Do you see any sort of overlap between what you do with R bloggers and what is done on GitHub with sharing of code and sharing of repositories and things like that?
No. I feel like, so we were talking from different angles at the empowerment, and I like people being empowered. So you could draw reference in the sense of, for example, I don't tell people, here, I'm giving you a platform to write in. I don't tell them, write in our bloggers. I tell them, no, go to WordPress.com or start your own independent website, which you can do very easily. And I tell them, have full control over your own system, your own configuration, your own thing. I want you to be fully empowered. The only thing I provide is I give a certain level of curation to what you do. And in that sense, I make sure that you have access to a broad audience that is interested in what you have to say, and I make sure that what you're doing is not rubbish,
mm-hmm.
And that you don't use foul language or bad taste pictures. And I think that's the service I provide. So I'm more of a curator to what is happening, and make it so that if you're an R user who is looking to read about R, you don't need to now go look for the 556 blogger, but that blogger tells me he exists, and then you know he exists. So that's the service I provide. With GitHub, I don't feel that that's what they offer. I think that if anything, it would more resemble CRAN. So you would think that maybe GitHub is like WordPress, and CRAN is something similar more to our bloggers in that sense. But I think that CRAN is a more complex project, more impressive project, and more important project. So. Yeah, I wouldn't take that much credit.
So here's a question. So you have a view of R. You have an opinion about R. Where do you think R as a technology, as a community, however you want to answer, is going in the future?
Wow. So I think this morning we had a wonderful talk by John Chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which was, I think, a very humbling and important talk. And he was emphasizing how much R is, in his mind, an interface language. I had the person saying to me once that, well, R, Python, they're all just nice wrappers to C. And I think that there, I mean, there is a lot of truth to that, because you want to have a tool which is very easy to work with. But the truth of the matter is you can't have one tool that solves everything.
Sure.
And I think the that there is many.
Okay.
But the fact that there are so many different technologies these days,
diversification.
The fact that you have so many different technologies today, one has to ask himself, where does R fit?
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy for me to go to people who are using SPSS or SAS and say to them, well, if you really want a GUI and everyone in your department uses SPSS, fine, keep using it. But if you want something that is more powerful and allows you more control, you probably want to move to R. Not because it's free, but because it's so flexible, it's so well thought out, and it's built for this type of thing. So what I did in my thesis, I see no way of doing in SPSS in a reasonable time span and development time. So R has a role in the world for people coming from that background. But for people who are in computer science and are coming from large data, big data, data science, all these buzzwords that we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
These people are looking for solutions for problems that R was not designed originally to solve.
Yeah.
And I think that Chambers and other people are very humbled to recognize that R is, by itself can be a wonderful wrapper and a language that offers its community and other people who would join it a nice tool to interface to other technologies.
Sure.
So I think that the most interesting thing we see right now is how this is more and more becoming understandable by the community. I think that more and more people are talking about it and are seeing R as a good interface and are really finding wonderful solutions of how to interface R to other things. So I think that's one very interesting thing to think about when dealing with the R community, of how it is an interface and what should it interface to and in which way. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
A second thing, which I think is interesting in terms of the future of R, I think there is a sociological, very interesting thing about how the R community is organized. So you have repositories, you have RForge, which I feel like less and less people are using. You have GitHub, which more and more people are using. You have CRN, which I think is very valuable, and I really hope it would continue existing as a curated resource, which is in some way more verified than GitHub. So you have those elements. You have the R core element, which I haven't figured out yet. I don't know where it's going and how it's going, but these are incredible people who are giving a lot from themselves, and I really hope there would be good ways for the community to contribute back to them and to have them continue their work. There are many different interesting people trying to re-implement R interpreters in C++ and in Java. And I think these are very interesting projects, not because I would like to use them, but because it would be interesting if eventually, 10 years from now, we would, as a community, gravitate to a different implementation that would be better built from the ground up than R was, because it wasn't designed for many things that it's used now. Also, I think something that I found, so R bloggers, for example, it solves a problem, which is how can we know fast about new things people are doing, as opposed to what forums and Stack Overflow solves, which is how can we get help.
Yeah.
So getting help is wonderful. It's not what you're going to get in R bloggers. So I tell bloggers, you can't ask questions as your post. Your post is supposed to be something you're answering to people.
Sure.
So that these are problems that are already solved. I think one other thing that I'm trying to currently help with is a new website I started called r-users.com, which is basically an R job board that try to help people out. So because I have this access to R bloggers, I am able to redistribute to the R community the need for people in workplaces. So it's a resource for employers who are trying to look for R users into their company. And they may say, you know, I want someone who knows R and JavaScript and C++ and
sure.
Hadoop or whatever, but I'm trying to look for these people. Where can I find them? And this has been very successful so far.
So nobody else has been somewhat successful so far. So nobody else has actually spoken about jobs in R.
Yes.
Actually, you're the first person that I've spoken to that has talked about it.
Yes.
How is the job market for R developers?
That's a fascinating question, which is, again, the reason I started this website, because As with our bloggers, I was asking, who is writing about it? And instead of trying to look for it, I said, let's make it very incentivized. Let's make people very incentivized to tell me of what they do. And our users is exactly the same thing. I was also curious because I feel when we're thinking about a community of open source, a very important aspect of it is money.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very tricky element because both sociologically and psychologically, how do you motivate people but not de-incentivize them? So there are a lot of there is research done in different communities. When you give people money for a job they do for free, would they stop doing it?
Yeah.
Would it make a difference on how they feel? Would they feel if they don't get any money, do they feel unappreciated? So I think the motivation aspect is very, very important in our community, and I think money is not discussed that much.
Mm-hmm. But well, it's an academic community to a great degree.
Well, but that's true. It came from, it sprung out from the academic community, but I think that we want our to be combined and connected to many, many different other communities, which are also business oriented and also government oriented. And in keeping that in mind, I think that we really want to help people find jobs and help employers find the people who use R, and also try to help it make it clearer for people who use R to know what they need for the job market,
yeah,
which right now, to be honest, none of us know.
Yep.
I mean, if I were to ask anyone in the conference, I think there are very few people who would be able to tell me what they need to know combined with R to find a good thing to work with. And the website gives you a long list of people who are offering jobs for people in our community. So this way it makes it very simple, very easy for people that are introduced to the language to go on the website and say, ah, this is the type of technologies people are looking for. So I should empower myself not just with R, but also with C++ or Python or something else, which depends on the job market.
Cool. Have you written a blog post about it yet?
I've written several, and actually there is a bi-weekly, meaning once every 2 weeks I publish a post with all the new jobs, and it's been going on for several months now. So every 2 weeks I publish between 2 new jobs to 10 new jobs, and people are going into it. It has something like 200 to 400 views a day, the website, plus 2,000 a day when I publish it on our bloggers.
Cool.
So it's working really well. Oh, and one more thing I wanted to say just about the future of R. I think the most, it would sound maybe funny, but I think that I get to experience a lot of new technologies and new developments in the R community over and over. And it's rare that something that I come across something that I say, wow, this is really revolutionary in some sense. R Studio, I think, was one of those things that I said, wow, that's incredible. A lot of visualization things that are going on, the optimization, the high-performance computing, there are a lot of very impressive, interesting stuff going on. All of them are revolutionary. One thing that I really got very enthusiastic about was piping.
Yeah.
So piping is the simplest concept you can think about. But
from Unix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so for people who are not aware of what piping is, you should go discover it. I learned about it from Hadley, through his implementation in the dplyr. And he's really basing his work, I think, on Magritter, and the guy who authored Magritter insists on saying it in a French accent, so I think it's Magritter or something like that. But it's a very simple package that lets you move an object from one an object from one function to the other, to the next one. And for me, as someone who's developed this dendextend package for dendrogram manipulation, the way you're doing it is that you take the dendrogram object, you modify something in the attributes, and you result in a new dendrogram. And then you pass it to another function, then you update the object again. And it's not the workflow you need for everything in R, obviously, but for something like dendrograms, that's the way you want to do it. So for me, I saw this thing yesterday and I was like, oh my God, this is perfect, because this is exactly the way you would want to modify dendrograms.
Yep.
So I think this is conceptually, in the way people use R, I think this is conceptually a really revolutionary concept to be introduced to data analysts. I think that this is, I mean, it's incredibly simple, but it's amazing how something so simple, I believe, is really so important.
It's a change
of course. So really go learn about it. And if this is going online, you should give links to everything. So also give a link to that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for hosting me.
Cheers.
Thank you.